Thank you very much for joining me this evening. And remember, I'll be back again with you tomorrow on Coast to Coast AM. Check out the website, Coast to Coast AM, for some of the highlights and news that we've got up right now. You guys have got to see these stories. An astronomer claims an approaching asteroid is actually a piece of Planet X. There's also a huge hotel that's plunged into a river and a Bosnian healer that licks eyeballs in order to help you with your affliction. I thought I've heard it all, but I guess there's always more to learn, folks. Bosnian healer licking eyeballs in order to cure you of your afflictions. Yeah, very strange. And in the news, European space bosses reveal a plan for a lunar 50-mile-high dome of contemplation. Cipher War, an astronomer that predicts a piece of Planet X will hit Earth in February, and the secret history of the first cat in space. So go check that out. There's also information regarding the death of John Hurt, the actor, as you probably recognize him from The Elephant Man. He portrayed John Merrick, the Elephant Man, and was also one of the featured players in the original Alien movie. You recognize him having a little alien burst from his chest that kind of caught cinematic history. He passed away today as well. So that's what's going on. But you can go check out the website, see all the great information. And while you're there at Coast to Coast AM, become a Coast Insider so you never have to miss another minute of the best in overnight talk radio. As a matter of fact, if you sign up for a one-year subscription, it breaks down to just 15 cents a day. And that will give you access to over 5 years of past archives. It gives you one-on-one talks and chats with George Norrie and some of the top guests you hear on the show. You can also find all the other great information there and some exclusive content for Coast Insiders. So go sign up right now, and it's a great item to give as a gift. You got Valentine's Day right around the corner. What's the best thing to give to somebody that has everything? How about giving them a subscription to the best in overnight talk radio? Go sign up for it right now, and you can get the Coast to Coast app and more. It's all available. It's all there for you. When we return, Daniel Klass will join me, and we'll open up phone lines at the bottom of the hour if you have questions for our guest regarding the haunting of Hinsdale House. We do that next here on Coast to Coast AM. Daniel Klass is here with me for the remainder of this hour as we talk about the haunted Hinsdale House, the Dandy Home, and talking about this. What a strange story. I mean, this family moved in. They had activity from the minute they moved in to the minute they moved out 4 years later. Failed exorcisms took place on the house. Many different spirits and energies have been witnessed in the house. They even did a 2006 episode of the TV series A Haunting, which aired on the Discovery Channel, based on the Dandies and their experiences. And as years have passed, there have been numerous families that have lived in the home but have not stayed for long. And the last occupants of the Hinsdale House were Joe and Florence Minsk, who passed away a few months from one another. And we're talking with the new owner of the home, Daniel Klass. And Daniel, you know all this history. You've heard what's happened to people that have been there before. Are you ever nervous for yourself to be there and own this kind of property, knowing that it's got this kind of energy and in some cases very negative energy attached?
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like it was, I'm called there. So nothing negative has really ever happened to me there. I feel very protected. I protect myself when I go there, when I get there, when I leave the house. I'm very spiritual. So, I put my faith in God when I go there, you know, and I feel like that's my calling. I need to help these spirits at this house.
When you've been there, have you ever had a moment where you felt in danger?
When I've been there, there has been a moment where I felt like somebody else was in danger, and I've had to intervene to get them out of the house, get them grounded.
What type of activity started to take place that made you feel like this person's in trouble or potential trouble?
It's a person that goes to the house a lot. He helps me do investigations there, and I feel like he left his guard down. I feel like he really opened himself up to what was ever there. And at one point he started to not seem like himself when he was upstairs. He didn't know who was in the room. it just seemed like whatever was there was taking over him in a way. There was a, you know, and I just learned this out last month, there was another exorcism performed at this house later with another paranormal investigator that was at the house. Yeah, I mean, I just found that out too. Like I said, it's a like a big puzzle. But we had to, you know, we had to get him out of the house, and I kind of, unfortunately, I banned him from there for a while, you know, until he, you know, we knew that he was going to be okay, and then he slowly started coming back here and there, but we don't let him come as much, and we kind of have to spread it out. So
you've said that this place seems to have trapped energies, trapped spirits there. With that said, do any people that leave the location ever feel as though they have been followed by the spirits of the Hinsdale house?
We've had a couple, you know, that we've had to help that they, after they've left the house, that they felt like something may have followed them home. And then also, it also happened when they filmed that Paranormal Lockdown TV show there, when Nick was there. You know, it was another situation where he felt something followed him home as well. So, I mean, there has been a couple instances in the few years that I've been there where we've had to help a couple people.
Isn't that an interesting aspect, though? If these spirits are trapped in this house, how are they able to adhere to some people and but never really seem to break free of the property itself?
I'm not sure on that. I mean, I think that if you let your guard down, maybe you can let it leech onto you. If you... Like, for instance, like when Nick was there, he was there for 72 hours. I know I was there. I mean, he didn't sleep very much. I mean, when you get tired and you let your guard down, maybe that allows whatever there to kind of leech onto you a bit, you know? I mean, because it's funny because after he left, I was getting EVPs in the house asking where he was. Like, something was there asking for him. Where's Nick? On numerous occasions. It was really weird. Really crazy.
And with that said, did any of these people ever feel like they were in danger after they left because of the connection?
You know, after we, you know, when they felt like, I don't, not, nothing dangerous in their house, just mm-hmm. like they felt like something was there. So, you know, of course we would send our team out to help them with that. And then after that, nothing happened, you know, with the two people that something was happening at their house. So. You know, we did a house cleansing for them.
Sure. Talk to us about the experiences that you've had. Have you seen physical manifestations in that house?
I have. You know, it's the first experience I ever had is when I was, this is at when the house was going for through a foreclosure process. We were at the house. There was no electricity at the house at the time, and I was in the kitchen with the house manager Michelle and another investigator, and I had a K2 meter, and everything that they were asking was about the exorcism, and then I had asked for Flo Misnick. You know, I said, because this is a family that I had just recently researched, that I knew they lived in the house, and, you know, I wanted to start finding more, you know, I wanted to start finding out, who are these people in this house? Who are these spirits in this house? So I had asked for her, and then I got this tingly feeling up my arm, and my K2 meter lit up to the red, all the way to the red in my hand, and I went forth and had what I thought was a conversation with Flo Misnick in this house, and I had asked her to hold my hand, follow me up the stairs. Now, I mean, everybody's seen the TV shows with these K2 meters where they bleep and they go down, they bleep, the lights go up, the lights go down when you're asking questions. This thing in my hand literally stayed lit the whole time when I asked her to hold my hand and follow me up the stairs until we got to the threshold of Mary's room, and that's when it disappeared. I've also, you know, you hear things moving in the house. Like, I've never been able to sleep a full night there. You know, you hear things upstairs, but something's walking up there. You can hear, like, shuffling going around upstairs in the master bedroom. Out by the pond, I've physically seen with my eyes, it looks like a white womanly figure out in the back by the pond, and many people have seen it. You know, I keep a log when the teams come in to investigate. I have them fill out a log of what happened. You know, did you get any type of good evidence that you can write down in this book from the two nights that you spent there, the one night that you spent there. And a lot of times they come back with me as more, obviously, after they review everything. But many have seen this woman in white that I saw. And there's many other accounts of other spirits as well that have been caught on camera and film that I haven't seen with my own eyes, but other people have. Indian chief, a shadow man that we have got a really good picture of in front of the house. A little boy and a little
And where
girl.
Can people see these pictures and videos? Do you have them posted somewhere?
Yeah, I have them on my Facebook page. It's a Tinsdale House Restoration Project. So there's pictures up there of the woman in white, the spirits that have been caught in the house, this shadow figure. I just got the picture of the Indian chief from another investigator who investigated the house in the 80s named Mike Rumbacher. And he provided me with a whole bunch of new material that I'm going through right now from when he did stuff there in the 80s. He knew the Miznik. So going through all that stuff now. And it's the other thing, too, like Clara wrote in her book about this chanting that she heard, like a Gregorian chanting from the woods. And we've heard it. I mean, I've literally been out there after I've done a tour, sitting by the campfire in the back of the house, and you hear sometimes a drum beat or a whistle, like a flute type of Indian whistle or a chanting coming from the hill behind the house. And when we go up there to look and see what the heck's going on, there's nothing there. I mean, I don't even know where it's coming from. And we don't have a neighbor within a couple miles. So, I mean, it's odd to me. Like, where is that coming from? I don't know.
And have you been able to record audibly the sounds that you're getting, that chanting?
We've been able to get the drum beats. You know, I initially, you know, when you initially hear something like that, you're like, oh, my God, you know, go run and get your equipment. And there's been times where I haven't had equipment there when I've been there. But after the investigation, when we heard the drum beats, we had it on our audio. You could hear it, doosh, you know, and a few seconds later, you hear it again. And we went and played it back, and there it was. So there's something, some type of thumping noise coming out of the woods, for sure. That we have audio recorders.
And people can see some of the photographs and video evidence by visiting the Hinsdale House Restoration Project on Facebook.
Correct.
And I'm just scrolling through some of the pictures and things here. So it's there, it's available. And you're located in, is it New York?
Yeah, we're in Hinsdale, New York. It's north of Olean, about an hour south of Buffalo.
Okay. Oh, so you're not that far then from Rolling Hills Asylum?
No, that they're our neighbors.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right. So, yeah. But, you know, it does make you wonder when you've got rich hauntings like that all in a clustered area. Are there other locations that lie along any type of ley line that trace from your place through Rolling Hills, anything like that that you've been able to find?
I just started digging into that, like in meeting with Mike Rumbacher. He's actually, you know, giving me information on stuff that he's investigated as far as the ley lines go where the house lays. And it's funny because the Hinsdale house is on, I don't have the information with me, but it lays on the line of a power plant. And he's also dug in as far as like Mason markers, like pointing to that area. Like there's got to be something there, something more.
Well, if again, that kind of lends itself to the geographic location. If you've got large underwater streams, do you know much about the geomagnetic principles? Is it heavy limestone and quartz in the area?
That I'm not 100% sure of either.
And I hear that a lot at hauntings, that it's that type of ground. I just wonder how often or how prevalent around the United States there's a limestone or granite base. If that's something that is everywhere, or is that just something that is, specific to certain areas? Because the hauntings that I'm most familiar with, like the Stanley Hotel, that sits on a hotbed of quartz and limestone. Does that mean that there is something there that can traditionally hold an energy? That's where it gets interesting to me.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of theories. I mean, for sure.
What all are you doing?
I do have plans to do an excavation of the land, or as far as doing some dirt samples.
Sure.
I also wanted to have the pond dove as well. I'm going to bring in a team to have the pond dove this summer to see if they can see anything in the pond.
What do you think there's a chance of? Do you believe that there may be a body or two in the pond?
I don't know that there's necessarily a body or two, but maybe we can get some answers. Maybe, what if we find a bone? I mean, who knows? I mean, there's a guy by the name of Lee Ehrlich.
Mm-hmm.
He's an underwater paranormal investigator. He can take a pocket of water and get an EVP out of it. It's a really interesting guy if you ever have a chance to talk to him. I met at a symposium in Denver. And I want to bring him in, and I want to see what he can come up with as far as maybe diving into that pond and seeing if there's anything that he can get out of there.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. I'm my skepticism level is still high when it comes to underwater because of the way sound travels.
Right.
And I often wonder if, you know, and again, not trying to be the gloomy Gus on this, but if you go to Chicago, there's a few places where, you know, they talk about the haunted train tracks where that circus train crashed. And on certain nights when the moon is right, you can hear what sounds like animals from this train crash. Well, what you also don't realize is that you're directly in line with the Brookfield Zoo, which is like 5 to 6 miles away. And you think, well, there's no way you're going to hear the animals. But yes, if you're in the direct sight line of this area and it's a clear night and there's a breeze, it can take sound very far and give it ghostly effect. And I often wonder with water, you know, we're constantly being bombarded with different broadcast array from satellite to microwave to radio. And I just, to me, the whole idea that water can conduct sound like that and would work as possibly an amplifier, I'm really kind of skeptical about the whole idea of paranormal investigating in water, but I'm certainly intrigued. And especially if you're getting, I guess, if you're getting things relevant to the area, that would be more intriguing to me. With doing that. But yeah, we'd love to hear more about that as you...
Yeah, I know he's like invented different different type of recorders that are in airtight pouches. And you have to really talk to him, but it just really intrigued me when he did a speech. And I thought maybe, hey, why not try it? You know, it's not going to hurt either way, you know?
Has anyone been injured investigating?
No. I mean, there's been people that have been scratched there.
Okay.
Pushed, but nothing like too significant. You know, I mean, they're all aware of when they come in what could possibly happen. So there has been a few people that have had scratches on them.
What do you attribute that to? Do you think that it is truly a malevolent spirit, an angry spirit? Or do you think, because I've seen scratches.
Mm-hmm.
I've had scratches. But to me, it just seems like a demon is going to vivisect you. It's not going to just give you three scratches as though your cat jumped off of you a little too quickly, you know?
Yeah.
So that's where my question and concern comes in when it comes to those type of experiences.
Yeah, I don't think that it's, I'm not going to sit there and say it's a demonic spirit, you know? I mean, I don't think that since I've owned the house that I've been able to equate that. I've been in the house where there's been an exorcism. I've been in the house that there's an exorcism being performed in. You know, this to me is something that may be sinister, something that is dark, but it could be a human spirit that was pissed off. I mean, who knows? Who knows at this point what it is, but it seems to have some type of control over the spirits in the house, whatever it is.
Fascinating. And I'm curious if we have listeners that are out there that have a better understanding. How can one spirit hold another spirit hostage in a situation like this? We're going to open up phone lines during this next segment. So if you have questions for our guest or theories on what might be going on there, or if you've investigated it yourself and would like to share your own experiences, phone lines are open. This is your chance to shine. And then for the last 2 hours of the show, open phone lines. I'd love to hear your paranormal experiences and what your thoughts are on this world we call the supernatural. Is it really supernatural? Are we really surrounded by dead people? Or are we dealing with time slips, with other type of phenomena? I'd love your input on that. Hey, if you like what you're hearing on shows like this, then join me on my show, Beyond the Darkness. You can find it at podcast1.com, Monday through Friday. Each day, a 60 to 90-minute new podcast delivered directly to you. Go check out podcast1.com for Beyond the Darkness. We'll be back with more Coast to Coast AM. What's that? You've missed part of tonight's show? You wish you could catch up? Well, we've heard your worries and concerns, and we put together the most comprehensive way to keep up with the best in overnight talk radio. You can become a Coast Insider. It'll give you access to 5 years of past archives, thousands of hours of shows that you can tune into for yourself and hear all of the amazing topics we cover on Coast to Coast AM. And how much would you pay for this? How about 15 cents a day for a one-year subscription? It is the gift that keeps on giving. Go sign up, become a Coast Insider right now, and find out what the rest of the world knows, why we are the best in overnight talk radio. Plus, you'll hear all the great episodes I've been a part of for the last 4 years. I've been a part of the Coast to Coast family. I'll be back with you tomorrow night, again, back on February 18th as well. So we've got a lot to talk about and discuss. I'm going to try to get John Sable on with me in February. We talked about him a little bit earlier. He is an archaeological paranormal investigator in the sense that he goes to a place rich in history and really seems to dig deep into specific time eras that he can peel back almost like pages in a book. And some of the results he gets is absolutely insane. And I've heard some of the most unbelievable Class A electronic voice phenomena and sounds I've ever heard. So we're going to try to get him on the show in February. So keep with us. And again, if you ever have a guest or topic you'd like to hear me cover when I'm on the show, just email it to me at dave@darknessradio.com. dave@darknessradio.com. And if you can't get through on the phone lines tonight, you can also email me and try to put your questions through at dave@darknessradio.com. And I will try to integrate them and work them throughout the show. Daniel Klass is our guest as we continue to talk about the haunted Hinsdale House in New York. We'll take your phone calls when we return. Stay tuned. There's so much more to discuss right here on Coast to Coast AM. We're back. This is Coast to Coast AM. Sitting in for George Norrie, I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Phone lines are open. We're ready to take your calls. Daniel, are you ready to face the audience?
Let's do it.
All right. Let's begin with our first caller, Wildcard Line 1, Linda in Illinois. You're on the air.
Okay, Dave, you and Richard Stair in Canada and George are my three favorite guest hosts.
Well, Linda, I already liked the beginning of this call.
I just had to say that. Okay, when I'm done here, can you send me back to Tommy? I got something I want to ask him briefly. And first of all, didn't he say that the noises in the basement were different than the sounds coming from upstairs? Because I'm thinking, here's my way of thinking on this, were they trapped in that basement and could not get out? If it was Indians, did they have the house surrounded and this is where they went to hide so they wouldn't be seen? And then the second one that I have is I have a friend that rents a home in a country. And him and his wife don't sleep together because he snores too loud like a train. Okay, so he says he'll lay there in bed, never knows which night it's going to be, but he'll lay there and be sleeping, and there's an old woman that hangs over his bed, and she yells his name, and it wakes him up. And then he said his wife has been in her room, and she has felt her bed go down as if someone sat down on the end of the bed.
Wow.
I'd be gone.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be there.
There's points to just light a match and walk away, right?
Well, you know, there's other houses to rent, you know. She don't bother nothing. She just will yell at him, stand over the bed. She don't yell real loud, but she yells his name out and then goes and sits with his wife. Oh, God. So anyway, those are the couple comments, and then when you get none there, send me back over to Tommy, will you?
Sure. What can you tell us about her question regarding the sounds?
Yeah, what I was referring to are EVPs. So it was more or less, I feel like the EVPs we get in the basement are more distinctive than what we're getting. There's specific voices that we're getting in the basement. It seems like of a young boy, and we don't get that boy upstairs, you know, so it's a different, so maybe it's a different level. Maybe he's stuck in the basement. And as far as like the Indian, I don't think the house was in there. I don't think the Indians would have been hiding in the house, but very well may have been built on top of Indian remains, you know?
Hmm. Very well could be. Well, yeah, keep us up to date on that, too. If you find more information as you continue to dig through the history, we'd love to know about that. We'll have open phone lines for the remainder of the show after the top of the hour, but if you have questions for our guest, you can email them in to me, dave@darknessradio.com, or you can call us and be a part of the show. Thank you for calling, Linda. I guess we'll try to get you on hold so that Tommy can take your call. Let's go west of the Rockies. Paul in Redondo Beach, California. You're on the air.
Hi, Dave and Daniel. How are you guys doing tonight?
Doing great. Thanks for listening.
Doing good.
Sure. Great show. I just wanted to give a quick call. I had the privilege and great honor of being a student of Dr. Alphonse Tribbold.
Awesome.
And, see, the amazing guy. And he always took pause when he mentioned Hinsdale House. So it kind of gives me a little jitters and shivers when I kind of think back to it, because Bonaventure was a very important part of my life. But, I just wanted to let you know that. It was pretty, very interesting to hear what you guys are talking about with the Hinsdale House.
I mean, so many people that I've spoken to that have been a student of his, they just speak the world of him, the way that he approached things and how interesting his classes were. I would love to have met him,
He was very, very humble, very humble guy. Didn't really like speaking about, being that he was the exorcist priest for the Diocese of Buffalo, that he really didn't, he wasn't overt like that. He was very private. But when he did speak of things, he was very, very interesting with regards to just the knowledge and the pause that he always had and the great respect for the paranormal. So.
All right, thank you. Thank you for calling, Paul. We appreciate that. I'm sorry, go ahead with what you were saying, Daniel.
No, I was going to say that's basically the same reaction that I get of anybody that speaks of him. Just what a humble guy he was. But he was he did so much research. He had like his own library, he did so much reading and so much learning.
Let's go east of the Rockies. We've got Kimberly in Chesapeake, Virginia. Welcome to the show. Kimberly, what did you want to ask?
Yes. When listening to the radio at night, mm-hmm. when I turn between dials, mm-hmm. and I get a lot of New York stations that overlap a lot, and it's, when you tell, hear three and four radio stations together, it's kind of haunting. I wonder, around Hinsdale, do they pick up the same way?
As far as radio stations?
Yeah, if they pick up the same way, like two and three radio stations in New York over at the same time.
I mean, I honestly don't really turn the radio on there that much, unless we're there in the middle of the day, like painting or something like that. I really never experimented with, the radio at night. Usually when we're there for investigations only, so that would be distracting to what the investigators are trying to accomplish.
Thank you, Kimberly. I'm wondering if she's curious, because so many people use the spirit box technology, and because of the radio messages that seem to come through, I wonder if that would have any kind of effect on the kind of contact we could make using that technology. Have you had any luck with spirit boxes?
I've used the Geo Box up there that George Brown invented, and I've gotten some really good stuff out of that. I also have a Andy's box that was, I'm really into them. That's something that I think is on the cusp of maybe allowing for a conversation with something that's passed over. And as they're cleaning them up and maybe putting a Faraday cage on the receiver, and we're getting communication out of it. I mean, it's crazy to me as how many of these radio waves and produce something that these spirits can communicate through, this white noise that it affects. So,
it is strange when you get, and I know there's a lot of skeptics, myself included. I understand how radio works, and I also understand pareidolia and how our brain is trying to make sense of kind of anarchy, whether it's visual perspective or audio. But there are times I've recorded, I used a spirit box when I went to the Lizzie Borden house a number of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And we were getting some unbelievable audio. At one point, when we were in the room where Abby Borden had been murdered, I set the recorder down on the floor where her body was and the spirit box and asked, could you please tell us your name? And clear as day, you hear this very proper woman through the static. You hear the of the radio, but you hear this very proper woman's voice go, Abigail Borden. And it blew us away. So when you do get the connections, there's no denying how clear it is. And it seems to be raised above the sound of the radio, almost like a walkie-talkie or a CB radio, the way the audio comes in. It's like it's over-layered over the top of what we're hearing come through. Very strange, but fascinating when you get that connection.
Yeah, when you get something like that, it just makes you think, you know?
Yeah. Let's go. First-time caller list, we've got Robert in Peoria, Illinois. Welcome to Coast, Robert.
Hey, David. Hey, Daniel. This is Robert from Peoria. Hey. I am, I'm a psychic medium. Also, I have a master's degree in forensic psychology, and I think they work both well together. When I'm called into a specific, to any house, what I have noticed and experience is that a lot of times I think the spirits are just as fascinated with us as we are to them.
I agree. I've been to so many locations where the spirits seem to have some kind of understanding of what's going on. I know when I did an investigation of Waverly Hills Sanitarium about 7 years ago with EVP specialists Mark and Debbie Constantino back then, we went into the morgue area. They turned on their recorders as we were sitting there, and then they began their questioning. And what was really weird, I mean, we were in there watching this unfold. When they turned on the recorder to play it back, before anybody spoke, you heard this ghostly voice go, "Shh, they're going to try to record us." So you suddenly are aware that whatever is there is very aware of you. So it's really strange when you realize that maybe the spirits are just as intrigued by us as we are of them. Do you find that in this house as well, Daniel?
I do.
Do you get that?
I definitely do. It seems like they're so familiar with the equipment that's used now because they have so many people coming and using similar equipment that they know how to manipulate it right away. You don't even have to ask them to. Sometimes you have to tell them to back off.
Doesn't it make you wonder if it's not necessarily that we're communicating with spirits of the past, but we're dealing with spirits of the future, and that that's why they're familiar with this equipment, because it was equipment that they used. You know, it's just a fascinating kind of concept to this whole paranormal realm, right? That people often want to believe that hauntings are our past, and I often wonder if we're being haunted by the future at times, and that's why things seem out of place and why we can't find records for a name or a person that's coming through. It may be that it's, in Charles Dickens' world, the spirit of things yet to come.
Yeah, or are these voices coming from a different realm? I mean,
right. Who
knows? Sometimes it seems like they're laughing at you on the other side when you're trying to communicate with them, or they're repeating what you're saying. Is it coming from a different realm? Maybe it's not a spirit. Maybe it's another human being trying to communicate you through a similar device on a different place, you know? Who knows?
Right. We're the ghosts to them. Let's go west of the Rockies. We've got Edgar in Dana Point, California. Edgar, welcome to the show.
Yes, hello.
Yes, Edgar, hello. Welcome to the show.
Hey, how are you? I'm good. I'm actually a first-time caller as well, but also I have a question, and also I want to bring up something that I have experienced when I was 14 years old.
Sure.
At Pennsylvania. Is it true where like how you say, when you touch a spirit or like a dead man, any prop that belongs to him, if you touch it or disrupt it, does it come back to you and haunt you during the night or any time?
Well, I think part of that's called psychometry, and that's the idea that you're picking up on the energy of something that was perhaps owned by or used by that person prior to their death.
Okay. Well,
That's not necessarily an active haunting, though. That's just like an energetic impression.
Well, something happened to me when I was 14 years old in Pennsylvania. I was playing football with my cousin in the snow, and my cousin, he tackled me, and mistakenly, but I just bumped into his tombstone and an American flag. And then later on that night, like something was holding me when I was asleep. I couldn't wake up. I couldn't speak. And when I opened my eyes, I saw an image of a Civil War soldier. And after that night, I went upstairs to my parents, and I fell asleep. I just went to sleep with them, and I was afraid. I was very terrified.
Well, I mean, it sounds like you've definitely tuned in to the paranormal in one way, shape, or another. Thank you for calling in, Edgar. Do you find that that's the truth with you, Daniel, and the people that investigate there? The more you expose yourself to the radiation of that haunting, the more easy it is to get responses, the more, you know, easy it is to have communication?
I think that's the same with any location that you go to, not only just this location. The more time you're able to spend at a location, the more familiar those spirits are going to become with you. Maybe they'll feel a little more welcoming when you come in to try to communicate with you. It's a good theory. I mean, there's a lot of places I go a lot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you just try to build that trust, I guess, if you will.
Do you find, too, when you're investigating, you may have a spirit that really likes to interact with you but is extremely crass, rude, or maybe even nasty to other investigators?
I have seen that happen before as well. I mean, there's been a time where I've been investigating, you know, we've been doing a public event, and it's communicating with me, and then when somebody else asks the question, it reacts in a negative way towards them, you know, like leave or get out of here.
Do you attend a lot of these investigations as well?
I do. If I'm requested to be there, I'm always there. If there's a team coming in that wants to know the history, they're, you know, I try to make it easy for them. I try to have a pamphlet of information, a plethora of information for them. So anytime I'm asked to be there, I'm there. You know, if a team wants me there, if I'm supposed to be there for a tour or something, I'll run maybe one or two tours a month for people to go through. But I have other team members that go as well. But anytime I'm asked, I'm there for the most part, unless I am at an event or something like that.
East of the Rockies, Amy in Newcastle, Pennsylvania. I think we may have time for your question here. What was your question?
Well, I just wanted to say hello, Dan, and I wanted to kind of touch on the Hinsdale House and what you were saying. I kind of lend myself to that same theory of the more that you're in a location, you have the opportunity because you're there more to witness more and you know the house more and what's normal sounds and what seems to be a bit off the norm. But it also seems like you become more of the environment to them. So instead of like hiding and kind of scoping and checking you out, again, this is all my theory, you're now part of the environment and it's this girl again.
That's true, Amy, and that happens at a lot of these locations, that you become part of the history and the haunting as well. Thank you for listening and calling in. Thank you to Daniel Klass for being a part of our show, and we have links up to his website and more so you can follow up on this. When we return, phone lines are open. We want to hear from you. What do you think of paranormal experiences? Do you have a different theory or concept on this? And what's the weirdest and most frightening encounter you've ever had? I'd love to hear from you. Give us a call. This is Coast to Coast AM.